listening to the Tennis.com podcast. And here's your host, Ed McGrogan.
Hello, friends. Australian Open preview podcast time here in Tennis.com land. I'm Ed McGrogan, joined by Steve Tigner, who's been slaving away all day at the previews that he brings to the table four times a year and other times as well when warranted. So, Steve, I figure, you know, there's a lot, obviously, to go down here. I think we'll start with the men and kind of go from there. And before we go there, I have to give credit to the Australian Open and whomever is running their website for highlighting each individual first round match, so you don't have to double check who is actually playing who. I thought there was a very little helpful highlighting there. So
it's an innovation. It's a big innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. 2017. Here we are. So, you know, you enter, you take a first look. I think the draw comes off pretty strong right away here with, you know, we have an unfamiliar name at the top for the Slams, Andy Murray, number one. And in his quarter of the draw, you know, the opposing top seed is number five, Kei Nishikori, but the real seed that most people will draw to their eyes to right away is the 17 seed, Roger Federer. And it was actually pointed out earlier today that that when Sampras won the Open in 2002, he was actually the number 17 seed. So how about that?
When Sampras won the Open?
Yeah, his last slam, he was the number 17 seed. And here we have Roger at a very unfamiliar number 17 in the draw. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter what seed he is, right?
I guess in a way that almost kind of segues into this talking point is, you know, if Murray and Federer do tangle in the quarterfinals here, I mean, at that point, I know we're getting a lot ahead of ourselves, but I think it's still worth talking about is, you know, can you pretty much throw it out the window at that point, given their history?
The seeding and,
you know, maybe even Roger Federer's absence for 6 months before the tournament. And I know there's a lot in between there, but I think this is what comes off the page right away is this potential quarterfinal, and maybe we can just start kind of with this.
Yeah, I don't think you can throw it out. I mean, Federer has a good draw at first. He'll play a qualifier and then another qualifier, but then he has to play Berdych third round. That's, you know, that's kind of the downside of the 17th seed. Berdych is a guy who's, he obviously doesn't usually beat Federer, but he has beaten him six times. If he wins that, then he plays Nishikori potentially 2 days later, a guy who's beaten him and who's obviously a good player. And then 2 days after that, he gets Murray. So I think then you start to, you know, is he going to be ready for all of that? And then even more after 6 months off, that's a big question. Federer has won the last five times he's played Murray. The last time Murray won was here in 2013. You know, Murray's best year. I mean, you can kind of look at Murray sort of back where he was, and he's got Lendl with him again. Lendl was there that year. Murray's number one. I think he's going to, you know, if he plays Federer, he's really not going to want to lose that match. Federer's kind of has had his number, but Murray's, you know, Murray took advantage of Federer and Nadal being absent last year to get to number one. And I think Murray has an easier draw. You know, that's where being the number one seed obviously helps. He's got first seed he could play is Querrey. Next highest is Lucas Pui. So, you know, Federer's got the harder road to get to that match. And if those are long matches Federer has to play, that'll take its toll in his first real tournament back.
Yeah, and one thing I want to mention is Pui, actually. I think that when it comes to the Australian Open, we often really go back to the US Open as some of the last time many tennis fans have even seen and watched some of these players play on national, you know, on the big stage here, of course. And Pui, you know, like Pliskova on the women's side, I think there's a little bit of remembering, you know, that run of his and his play there against Nadal and Flushing Meadows. as something pretty recent in a way. And I was wondering what maybe your thoughts are on Puig, you know, now at a number 16 ranking, and really maybe, you know, not even just for this tournament, but what we see for him this year overall, just because I think it's, I think we came away from last year and the Open in particular pretty impressed.
Yeah, he's had two good Grand Slams, the last two, Wimbledon and the U.S. Open. So you know he can win these. You know, he's good. He seems to be good in these 3 out of 5 set matches. I guess looking ahead for him in this tournament, he could play John Isner, which is obviously a wild card kind of match. That's a real test. You know, that's something different, not really necessarily based on who's the better player overall. So that'll be interesting. And then he could play Murray. And he's, you know, he's dangerous for Murray. Murray kind of specializes in beating these younger guys and sort of keeping them in their place just with his experience. So I still like him in that match. But Puig's a guy who somehow seems sort of faceless, or he doesn't make that much news. Nobody really talks about him much. But he could, you know, he could end up being the best or the second best among this, you know, the younger group.
Yeah, he's right in there along with, you know, in that sort of generation that we lump him together with. Nishikori, of course, at 5 there as well. You know, one of the higher numbers for him, too, of a seeding for a slam. Obviously someone to still keep in mind with this draw. It's a very good, pretty deep quarter, I think, overall. And really, you know, what you see when you move to the second quarter of the draw, I don't think it really slows down too much there either. I do think overall, if you're looking at who ends up with the tougher half, Murray or Djokovic at 2, I do think that Murray, facing a lot of obstacles, you know, potential obstacles, I think it's a little bit of a stronger half on his side. And in the second quarter, you have Stan Wawrinka at number 4, our most recent major champion. You also have both of the Aussie men that will get a lot of time on Rod Laver Arena, Kyrgios and Bernard Tomic. Two very, you know, Cilic and Sock, I sort of lump them together in a way of, you know, clearly Cilic, of course, a major champion, number 7, but two guys that you probably don't, you know, you shouldn't discount or want to forget about, even though they, you know, Sock is coming off, I should say, a pretty good Open. Cilic, actually, he came into the Open last year with a bit of momentum and just really didn't put it together there. So this, you know, this quarter of the draw as well, pretty deep, and I think a tough one to call, actually.
Yeah, it's a pretty big hitting quarter. A lot of power players in here. Wawrinka, Kyrgios, they could play in the 4th round. Tsonga could play Sock in the 3rd round. And also this young kid, Russian kid, Karin Khachanov, he could play Sock in the 2nd round match. That would be a real battle of forehand. So there's a lot of big hitters, a lot of guys I feel like who could, you know, a group of guys who could do damage in this tournament. Wawrinka, obviously. I think Kyrgios, he looks like, you know, I almost feel like Kyrgios hasn't really done as well as he should have in Australia. You know, we like to say he loves the big stage, but I feel like it's agitated him a little down there. He always plays the big night match. It's, you know, there's always a lot of expectations. He hasn't completely broken through there. Possibly this is the year. He seems to like playing Stan.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you talked about Murray Federer, the first quarter of sort of projecting where things could go, this one clearly is that Stan and Nick possibility. Obviously just tailor made for the 3:30 a.m. match on the East Coast nighttime in Melbourne. There, I mean, do you think that those two guys, and maybe Stan in particular, is this kind of really in the past, and this is sort of being overblown a little bit? Or I think that we can certainly project that that's a likely match. Depends how Kyrgios really comes back with. But do you think that sort of venom with that match is really going to materialize into anything if that happens?
I don't think so. I think it seems like they've played enough, and there's enough time has gone by that, you know, I mean, I don't doubt they'll ever be friends, but it seems like they're past that. It would be, I think, hard to imagine they could keep that going. I think it's what would be a year and a half now.
Yeah. Yep.
That could all change once they get on a court, and if Kyrgios acts up and Wawrinka gets annoyed, that could all start again. But I don't think it'll start with that kind of edge. I think Stan will want, you know, Kyrgios won their last match. I think Stan will want to win that match. I also look at Jack Sock as an interesting case. Like you said, he's in the final in Auckland. He seems like he's ready. You know, I think we said it last year. Like, it seems like he's ready for a big year. We've heard a lot about him working out, his workout regimen this year. He had a pretty good year last year. He seems like he has a good draw. The top seed in his section is Cilic, a guy that he destroyed at the U.S. Open last year. Yep. So it wouldn't be surprising to see Sock in the quarters.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Roy, to just see, you know, to tie back to Kyrgios one last time, is really just the crowd sort of in their allegiance and how much invested they are in Kyrgios. And for that matter, Tomic as well, who's in this draw. It's always sort of an interesting subplot, given sort of the soaring highs and the really, you know, cratering lows that both of those two have experienced and really will probably continue to experience. One last remark on this draw is, or on this quarter, you know, you talked to Steve Johnson a lot last year for a story in the magazine, and he had a career year. He's in this draw. He may, you know, speaking of U.S. Open rematches, he may face he played Del Potro at the Open, but he could get Wawrinka very early in this draw, second round, if they both advance. Johnson plays Federico Delbonis. I was kind of wondering, just off his career year, and, you know, he was briefly the top-ranked American, I wondered if you got the sense that Steve was really still building towards something that he projects to have, you know, whatever that is in his career. He's obviously a bit of a late bloomer when you compare him to players who didn't play college tennis and who came on the tour much younger. I just wanted to get a sense of what you saw from him, maybe, you know, toward his future and what's still to come for him.
Yeah, I think he takes it week by week. I don't think he sees himself as a guy who's, I mean, you just have to look at a guy when he plays Wawrinka, or even when he played Jack Sock this week. Those guys just have more shots than, you know, more power. They can take over points more quickly than Johnson. You know, Steve's a little more of a grinder, little more of just has to stay in there and stay patient and work at it. And I think he knows that. And I think that's the attitude he takes. I don't know if he really looks ahead too much as far as long-term goals. I think he's happy to be at this point, you know, having started kind of late. I think he's happy to have gotten where he is. And I was sort of always struck by how confident he stayed even when things weren't going well last year. He seemed to always really believe that he had the game, that, you know, that he was going to turn it around at some point, and he did. So I don't get a sense of him building up like, this is the year, mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
And I think he's realistic about what he can do, and takes it week by week.
Yeah, it's a nice diary of his season for those of you who have not checked out the Jan-Feb Tennis Magazine. I recommend it highly. We move to the third quarter of the men's draw, and what I see from this quarter is that, depending on sort of your feelings on certain players, I think cases can be made really sort of positively and perhaps negatively about a lot of these top names, even the highest seeds of the draws are in this quarter. You have Raonic at number three, who I do think proved a lot last year, and I think maybe even reassured some critics that, you know, he has demonstrated more than just the shot that he's always going to be known for. You have Monfils at six, another, you know, player who, speaking of career years, you know, he certainly had a career. It's still very surprising to see a seed that high next to his name. You know, and then you keep going down the line. I think you can just kind of, you know, how does Rafa respond to this year? I think some people are very, very bullish on him and others otherwise. You know, he's now, you know, he'll be 31 come the French Open. You know, has really the toll just, is it too much for him to ask to kind of deal with best of five set tennis over 2 weeks on a very sort of unforgiving environment here? Alexander Zverev, I mean, many people project very high things for him. He's at 24. And you got guys like Ferrer and Simone who are mainstays in the top 15, top 10 for years and years that are now at 21, 25. You know, to this, and we'll get to the fourth core in a minute, but, you know, maybe your thoughts on really the names in this quarter and perhaps where it could go.
Yeah, I think the expectations for Raonic are pretty high. This is a real opportunity for him. This section is not, you know, Rafa's on the other side of this section, but it's not a especially strong section. He's got Gilles Simon is the first play, you know, first seed he could play. Bautista Agut is the next seed he would play, and then Monfils, which you know really don't know where he's going to end up or what he's going to be like at this tournament. And Raonic beat him last year at the Australian Open, beat him 3 out of 4 times. So you really have to look at Nadal as probably his strongest competition, but Rafa in the third round might have to play Alexander Zverev. And I think that to me is like a 50-50 match. Zverev had a match point on him last year. He's better than he was when they played last year. Rafa has looked good physically, but still has a little bit of those nerves. You know, he lost to Raonic in Brisbane when he had a lead. It sort of seemed typical from Rafa last year. So, and Rafa actually also has the fairly tricky first round match against Florian Mayer, who beat him a few years ago on hard court. So I definitely like Raonic in this section. He doesn't come to Australia this year with a new coach. He just has his standard coaching set up with Ricardo Piatti. Maybe that's a good sign. Maybe he feels like he's set with that. So we'll see. You know, this is where he really started playing better last year. So it'll be interesting to see if he can keep that going again.
You know, where's kind of the, if we look at the top portion of that, obviously you're very high on Raonic here. When you look at Zverev and Nadal, as you say, two guys who I think are, I say wild cards in the sense that it's a little tough to project how high and how, you know, where these two could kind of end up really as the year goes on. We have talked a lot about Nadal. I think it's almost kind of foolhardy in a way, given how much the physicality impacts his game, to really project until we get a couple rounds in here. You know, he has that pedigree, of course, of just, you know, an amazing resume that will I think help him a lot and over this term wherever he goes. I mean, for Zverev, for listeners who haven't seen much of him, you know, we got to see a little of what he was able to do. If you watch Hopman Cup against Federer, we talked about that last week on the pod or earlier this week on the podcast. But what does Zverev bring to really men's, you know, what does he bring to the sport in terms of dynamic that some project, you know, amazingly high things for him?
Yeah, I think a lot of people see him as a potential number one. Rafa said it last year. Federer has said it. He's beaten Federer. He had a match point on Rafa. You know, he's 6'6". He's got the sort of the next step physically, 6'6", big serve. His backhand has always been excellent. Can hit winners on the, you know, can hit it like a forehand, and then his forehand itself has gotten better. He's got that shot, which is, you know, of all the shots you need these days, it's that four, you know, it's that put away forehand, we know, and Zverev has it. So there's really nothing, and he seems to be progressing pretty steadily. There's no, you don't get a lot of sense that he's a head case or has any problems that way. If he played Rafa, like I said, I would put that at about a 50-50 chance, and then if Zverev wins that, you know, you could easily see him in the quarters.
Yeah, Yeah, and as we move to the last quarter here, I have to say you always want to look at what some of the best first rounders are in the draw. It's you know, they're the only matches we know for certain that are going to happen. As much as we like to think that we're experts on projecting what will happen, I like two of them down here. I have to say the Tommy Haas Benoit pair matchup, pretty fun one to start. Haas actually is he's a tournament director already at Indian Wells, and he is clearly on his last. I think it'd be a pretty big surprise if this was not his last Australian Open year in general, but there he is. He will he'll play pair here in a first rounder, and then the one that will probably attract a lot more attention is Djokovic and Verdasco, mainly because Verdasco held 5 match points against Djokovic in Doha. Verdasco has quite a history at the Australian Open, against Nadal, both in victory and defeat. But two first rounders I like in this court, and there's a little bit more too.
Yeah, you hear a lot of talk about how Djokovic has a tough draw, and to some degree he does. Verdasco did almost beat him, but then again, he hasn't lost to Verdasco since 2010.
And it's best of 5 sets, of course. It's
best of 5. Yeah. Verdasco did beat Rafa here last year, and then also Djokovic, if he gets through the first few rounds, he played Dimitrov, who's had a good start to the year, beat 3 top 10 players and won in Brisbane. But then again, Djokovic, he's never lost to Dimitrov, or maybe he's lost once. He did lose once to Dimitrov, sorry, but he's got a good record against him. Definitely be favored in that. And then Dominic Thiem is also in this quarter, the number 8 seed, but Djokovic has never lost to him, and I'm not sure if I even like Thiem to get all the way to the quarters. So I actually like Djokovic's draw, unless Verdasco can come out and really surprise him. I mean, Djokovic is definitely going to be ready for that after their last match in Doha. So, I think this is a solid quarter for Novak.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see if we do get the kind of play that we've been accustomed to from Djokovic, and certainly what we saw in Doha. It's tough to see Djokovic, who has just been, so on target at this tournament for so many years. I mean, stretching back to his breakout win in 2008 to owning, winning the tournament 5 more times. It's really his event until, proven otherwise. It's kind of the challenge, essentially, that Andy Murray is given, so much sort of scar tissue over him over the years, and so many, and a few of those final round losses have come to Djokovic. We're pressed to pick a winner. I do see kind of Murray making it out of here with his first title, but to me it's pretty tough to imagine at least the top few seeds not making their seed, if you will, going. I think there has been a little bit of a even given last year where Rafa and Roger, you kind of seen where things have put them due to injuries and just their career. But I think at the same time, although there was change there, you have kind of seen the top 5 really firm up a little bit more, with Raonic at 3, Wawrinka, winning a major, staying at 4. I think that's kind of almost established a little bit of a new order. Now, by no means is that a repeat of the previous top 4, the incarnation that's just been dominating events for so many years. But I think this is kind of a pecking order that will probably hold form this tournament.
Yeah, I think it's a strong draw. You have the top 2 guys, Murray and Djokovic, have been to the finals there the last couple of years. You've got the 2 guys coming back, Rafa and Roger. You've got this group that's kind of slowly made itself contenders. Raonic, Cilic, Nishikori, Kyrgios, those guys are all, those guys all have a chance. They don't do it all the time, obviously, but they're all look pretty solid at the moment. So, I think it's a good men's draw that could, I'm not picking a major surprise to win, but but there's those possibilities are there.
Yeah, and you know, let's, you know, could the same really be said for the women's draw almost? And now the obligatory sort of reaction to the excuse me, to the WTA and their draw, you know, with Serena certainly more uncertain than before, even at number two. You know, does the women's draw sort of have that feel as well, that you know, it's that there is a bit of an order, but it certainly wouldn't be but there's a group as well that can kind of contend and take it and, you know, really make this their own here. If we start at the top of the women's here, it's, you know, as we did with the men's, this is a new number one for the new year. Angelique Kerber, 1-2 now as we record this podcast. She's taken two losses this season. She'd get a challenge right away in Kasatkina at the number 23 seed there, and it's something that Kerber will not probably, you know. And you have to wonder where the element of defending the title, defending the points that come with it, you know, how does that play into Kerber and her defense? You know, the remainder of her quarter is, I don't think, very strong, quite honestly, if you're looking at just the seeds. You have Muguruza, of course, who is, you know, the highest opposing seed. But I think, you know, predicting, you know, those two to definitely make it to the final eight is, you know, it's ambitious given especially Muguruza's history. Some interesting unseeded players here too: Jeannie Bouchard, Coco Vandeweghe, both in this area of the draw here. So I think a bit to digest with this one, but nonetheless, you still have, you know, 2016's most dominant player.
Yeah, Kerber, you know, last year she did show that she is pretty much always up for the big tournaments: Wimbledon, the Olympics, the U.S. Open, Australian Open. She was in the finals of all of them, so you can't discount that. But she has started slowly this year. She's 1-2. She didn't look good at all in losing to Kasatkina in Sydney, and she could play Kasatkina early again in this, but she also has a potentially tough first round against Lizia Zarenko, who won her first three matches in Hobart, who nearly beat Kerber a couple years ago down under in Sydney. She won the first set before Kerber came back, and Zarenko was sick at the end of Hobart, so it's up in the air whether she'll be ready to play. But that's a decent first round if Kerber's not ready. You know, Kerber didn't really look ready for her first match in either of her first two tournaments. So, you know, I think, like you said, Kerber and Serena have distanced themselves in the last year. Serena, obviously, but neither is coming into this, you know, looking, you know, particularly dominant. So this could be, I think Kerber should be happy with this quarter, though, because the second seed Muguruza is, you know, very unpredictable, and getting, you know, like you said, getting her to the quarters. Predicting her even into the quarters is, you know, it's not a sure thing at all.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair way to look at Kerber. I think maybe slightly vulnerable is the word, but I do think she'll have the opportunity to kind of reestablish her footing a little bit more given her quarter here. As for the rest of her half of the draw here, you move down to the second quarter. Simona Halep, Svetlana Kuznetsova, the top two seeds. Venus Williams still at 13, Svitolina at 11. Monica Puig at 29, the gold medalist, of course. I don't see it as a very imposing quarter on at face value there. I think it's really... you know, this is sort of, in a way, I think, like the third quarter of the men's draw, where there's certainly some opportunity for a few players to really make a bit of a run here. I guess, you know, you have to start, though, with Halep, and, you know, just kind of thinking back on really, you know, what her mentality is into majors. I think it's kind of evolved in a sense where, you know, after her breakout of 2014, I want to say, it was really sort of, you know, okay, this is, you know, the next year, this is, you know, it's kind of major or bust time. It's kind of what can we see really on the, you know, at this level here. And I wonder if Halep has really sort of tried to repress that a little bit and just sort of, you know, realizing, I guess, her limitations in a sense, but I don't think she's ever lost confidence as well. It's kind of a strange balance, but I think that she is probably in a good space for it. And, you know, as the number four seed here, you know, like Kerber, will have, you know, opportunities to kind of work her way into this 2-week event.
Yeah, I think Halep will be happy not to be the number two seed. She was there last year and she lost in the first round. She's a little bit more under the radar. I do think that first round again will be tough. She's lost in the first round 3 times in the last 5 years here, and she plays Shelby Rogers, who is a player who can beat top players. She was a quarterfinalist at the French last year, and she plays a game that can give Halep trouble. She's a big hitter. She's tall. She can hit harder than Halep. That's the kind of match that could be tricky for Halep. And I think if she does lose, then this becomes a really a quarter with a lot of opportunity, because the second seed here is Svetlana Kuznetsova. I don't know if anyone really expects her to get to the semis. Venus, you don't know exactly what she was in the quarters 2 years ago, but she lost in the first round last year. I kind of like Svitolina's chances. She's sort of been working up to a Grand Slam quarter or semi. She's done well down there. She beat Serena at the Olympics last year. I sort of think she's a dark horse if Halep does lose.
Yeah, and it's really a first half where I think it's kind of on the racket of the top two seeds here, and you know, from then on, I think a lot can go any number of directions here. We move to the second half, and as I said about Luca Pui in the men's discussion, I think a lot can be said the same for Karolina Pliskova, who is the first name you see at the top of the draw. She's at number five, and in her quarter is Agnieszka Radwańska, number three as well. You know, for Pliskova, who has had a very nice start to the year, winning in Brisbane and winning very convincingly, I think there is a lot of reason for optimism with her. You know, we saw her run to the Open final, beating Serena and Venus along the way, giving Kerber a good match in the final two. If you're looking at kind of trickier seeds in the way of her, until you kind of get into the second week, if you will, Pliskova's chances I'm pretty high on for this, to be quite honest with you. And I think it's, again, it might be a little bit of that recency bias when you think of what she did at the Open, but it's hard to take that out of the equation. And quite honestly, it's hard to see for me to picture if Pliskova is showing that kind of play again, which, as I just mentioned, you know, she did during this opening week of the year. You know, her against if you want to say a Radwanska, if she does progress that far, I do like Pliskova in that matchup. You kind of go from there.
Yeah, those two. It's an interesting quarter because you've got two really good players, two very different players who are the top two seeds, Radwanska and Pliskova, as you said, and they're really above anybody else here. The other seeds: Cornet, Stosur, Vesnina, Bezinski, Gavrilova, Putintseva. You know, Pliskova and Radwanska are definitely the favorites over anybody there. I think Pliskova has the higher ceiling. She can do, if she's playing well, I do think she will beat Radwanska. You know, Aga has been to the semis a couple times here. She's obviously steadier. She's number three in the world. You know, I think both will see this as a real opportunity. Maybe, you know, they're in Serena's half, but maybe Serena's not quite what she has been, you know, not looking quite as good right now. And Pliskova before she reached the Open final last year, she won a big tournament in Cincinnati. She's coming off a tournament win in Brisbane. Maybe we are seeing her kind of take that confidence from last summer and consolidate it into something steadier. You'd like to think so. She really does have the draw to do something to do something good here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's as I said, with one of the cores in the men's, you have really two of the top Aussies here, Gavrilova, Stozer. Certainly by no means is Stozer reliable with this. She's really had a pretty poor history at her home slam here, but I think that Pliskova-Radwanska match, if that does materialize, as you said, you're getting two polar opposite players, but two very, very talented players, and I think it's really one of the matches that I think a lot would hope to happen here, and probably the best quarterfinal if it comes to pass here. Now, if you look, really kind of before that round, I think as you move to the last quarter of the draw here, I think you're seeing in this quarter, top to bottom, the best one in terms of depth, in terms of talent. Possibly unpredictability. I'm not sure. It kind of really depends on your thoughts on Serena Williams. I mean, right away, she gets, a match with Belinda Bencic that, maybe a year ago we might have thought a lot more about. Bencic actually already had a little nagging injury after Hopman Cup. But, Lucy Safarova, a potential, a former French Open finalist, could face the winner of that, likely Serena in the second round there. But you really look at the depth of this quarter overall with Sabalkova, who I still think is capable of that breakthrough just because of really the sort of all-around grinding game that plays well down here at number six on the other side, a very high seed for her. You have Konta, who has had a nice week in Sydney at number nine. I don't really love, I do think you have to kind of exercise a little caution with her. I think, again, it's sort of, this is sort of new ground for her, having to defend semifinal points, and just I'm a little suspicious of I want to tap the brakes a little bit on her, but that doesn't discount what she adds to this quarter, which also includes Wozniacki, who ended 2016 on a very strong, a very good run there. You have other seeds. Caroline Garcia still, has kind of established herself in the top 20, really sort of, you have players like Strixova, Makarova, certainly capable of giving any high-ranking player a tough time here. So, it's really, if you kind of ask the question about, Serena or the field when it comes to this quarter, I think there's a lot of, a lot of landmines in the way and a lot interesting to watch for.
Yeah, you've got some, Serena, but Bencic, you have to consider right away. Bencic beat her last summer. I still would obviously pick Serena. Bencic is kind of coming back. I think she was hurt earlier this year already. So, you still, of course, favor Serena there, but that's a good night match. Sibylkova, the second seed, she, finished the year on a great run last year, but she hasn't looked quite so sharp earlier this year. She's been to the finals of the Australian Open. And then you have Konta, who really has looked as good as anybody. She beat Radwanska in the tournament this past weekend. She has done well in Australia before. Her draw looks pretty good. She could face Wozniacki. I have to still probably have to like Konta in that. So she's definitely somebody who could reach the semifinals. I guess it still really just depends on where Serena is. If Serena beats Bencic, I kind of like her draw from there for a while, that she can work her way into the tournament.
And I think one thing about this, these Australian Open draws this year is, is that we're still players have gotten back to full health for the most part going this year, but we're still missing some big names. And the men's side, we didn't mention Del Potro. He's not in this one. He's taking this tournament off here. But, for the women's side in particular, it even provides more sort of opportunity and perhaps importance, you know, given that you're missing Madison Keys at number 8, who would have been certainly projected, I think, on a pretty good clip for this tournament. You have Maria Sharapova, who will be coming back later in the year in April. She's confirmed that she's back in Stuttgart. Victoria Azarenka not in this draw, to be determined when she comes back. You obviously have Kvitova not playing, given what happened with her. You know, not to say Ivanovic would have made a dent in this draw, but there are a lot of big names on the women's side that are not in this draw, and you wonder, given that I've mentioned a few slam winners there already, and there are certainly, you know, players in the top, even as high, you know, I could say, I believe the numbers 3 through 6 on the WTA rankings, that none of them have won a major title. And we do still have this bit of uncertainty with Serena and Kerber to a degree. I don't think any of us are ultimately convinced that, you know, a run to the final is destiny for them. So I wonder, you know, I think that's a big thing to keep in mind, is really the dynamic of this particular women's draw at this Australian Open.
Yeah, I think it does seem to me that the WTA, that it's the right time for a new slam winner. It's the right tournament. You take out Azarenka and Kvitova, two slam winners. You take out Madison Keys, a dangerous player. It's just, you look at Kerber and Serena, neither of them starting out the year on fire. You start to think if people like Radwanska or Halep or Pliskova, if they're going to win majors, even Cibulkova, you know, if those people are going to break through at any point, this would seem to be the one.
Yeah, and we'll have it covered pretty heavily. It's a it's obviously an all-nighter if you want to make it that way, but if you just want to come back during the day, you'll wake up to quite a bit. Daily previews, reviews, a lot of, you know, just, you know, the tournament covered top to bottom, as we often do here. And, you know, as you can just go to the site right now, men's and women's previews, quarter by quarter, our picks. There is a lot to digest on tennis.com, also on baseline.tennis.com as well. It's one of the majors. I have to say, this one usually kicks off the year pretty well. The Australian Open has really sort of, it's grabbed that, I think, over the last decade. It's really just continued to build on, I think, an increased presence in the game, and really just, has, you know, for a while, I think it was established as sort of the fourth wheel of the majors. I don't think it's that way anymore, and I just think we're going to see it bear itself out again down in Melbourne. So with that said, we'll be back on the podcast for sure during the tournament. We'll find some good opportunities to, I think, you know, we'll base it a little bit more on really what has transpired, and I think pop in when we need to talk about something. So for Steve and Ed, as always, thank you for listening to the Tennis.com podcast.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.